How many times have you seen Marge Simpson naked?
I reckon like 10.
That would make me piss myself. Did it actually? I was really laughing. And I was in a meeting and I was just messaging you on my laptop. And I was like, to turn my camera off.
We are all the same. You're listening to Just a Girl podcast, the podcast where we discuss anything and everything music industry and intersectional feminism related.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Natalie.
And I have no idea what episode this is.
41.
And this is episode 41.
Don't forget to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to.
You can email us at justagirlpod@gmail.com and you can follow our socials at justagirlpod.
Don't forget to share.
So, Natalie, what have you been listening to this week, you little minx?
Oh my good God. So, I've been listening to the new Billie Eilish album.
I've not actually listened yet.
I think you might like it.
Yeah?
Mmm.
All right.
Yeah, like 90s rock vibes, weirdly.
Do you have any highlights?
Yes, my highlight is the second track on the album. Can't remember the name, but it's the second one.
Okay.
I've also been listening to the new Cane Hill song, All We Know.
Ooh, not heard it.
Oh, you'd love it.
Oh my God.
Metalcore as fuck.
Yes.
And an artist called Torres. Do you know them?
Is it Perez?
Perez.
Robert Perez?
Torres.
Right.
They're just an indie rock artist and it's fucking fantastic. You'd love it, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Good Rex.
How about you?
I have been listening to Silk Sonic.
Oh, yeah.
Because Adam really likes them. There's a song called Skate, which is new. And you know when you're just like, yeah, like when a new song comes out.
Totally.
Something just clicked. Yeah, they're really good. You'd love it.
Aw.
I've been listening to, I don't know how to pronounce this. Adji, I think. It's A-D-J-Y.
Oh, yeah, you sent me a rec, didn't you?
Yeah, so I sent you that song. They had a 2021 album called The Idol Opus, and I sent you that song because they're like a math rock band, but it's quite emo, that song.
Ooh.
Didn't realise the song I sent you was 17 minutes.
Oh my God, I'm not listening to that, sorry, Katie.
That's okay. And I've also been listening to Origami's Angels, their 2021 album. Gami Gang.
Wow, love the name of that artist.
You'd love them.
Okay, excited.
So, Natalie, what are we talking about this week?
So, this week we are going to be discussing why allegations and abuse and all of this stuff that's coming out is so prevalent in the alternative music scene.
Yeah, so we're going to be sharing our ideas, I guess, on why the scene is in the state that it is. Again, we don't have the answer for this. We're just going to theorize and discuss. So we might not say things that you agree with, but we're saying them to create a safe space for everyone to have open discussions and allow change.
Yeah, and especially as, you know, making the scene a safer space is our mission, we should really get to the root of the issue and figuring out why it's existing in the first place.
Totally.
So shall we start with the problems that we recognize in our scene today?
Well, I think we should start with the main one, which is abusers, people who are either abusing women or abusing a marginalized. I think abuse might be the wrong word there, but perhaps. I think the main problem in the scene is abuse of fans, right?
Yes, definitely. And the constant allegations, you know, there was a period of time, and it still kind of does feel like this, where it just felt like nonstop. Every artist that you listen to, every pop punk artist you listen to especially, you know, everyone always made jokes about, oh, if I listen to this pop punk band, they might come out as abusers.
Yeah, and I think the main problem for me, certainly, is the fact that I'm not even surprised anymore.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be apathetic towards an allegation. It shouldn't just be like, oh, there's another one, which I think has almost made it, and I will come onto this, but it's almost possibly part of the reason why it's still going on, that it's not even shocking anymore.
Yeah, that's so true, actually. The fact that people are, I mean, we'll get onto this, but people are so willing to forget or don't even hear about it is maybe why people continue. But we'll talk about that in more detail later.
Obviously, we spoke about it last week or whenever it was on the pod, but I think cancel culture is also a problem that we can recognise within the scene. I think on a larger scale, it's a problem, but in the scene, it's a problem within itself.
Yeah, definitely, because I think that it's also not okay for people to live in constant fear of just existing, and that in itself has probably loads of mental health issues for musicians and fans and anyone involved as well.
Yeah, I literally had in my notes another problem within the scene that I recognise is fear. So people are scared to do anything for the fear of getting cancelled. And even standing up for people who need it sometimes, people are scared to speak out against abusers because they don't want to be deplatformed.
Definitely.
Which I have my own thoughts about, but I'm not going to criticise anyone.
Yeah.
I'm just going to think it.
Fair enough.
Also, before we get into the discussion, I've got gas. I keep burping. So
because of Coke or just generally?
We're drinking Coke Zero. So if you hear any, like, throat noises, it'll be a burp.
We haven't burped on the pod in ages, so
I know Jack will love it.
So before we get into sort of the history of misogyny in the scene, I think it's important to note that allegations, cancel culture abuse is not exclusive to this genre. You know, it happens in hip-hop and rap especially. And it's also not a product of the scene, it's a product of society as well. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't try and tackle the problem on this, I guess, small scale that we are doing. Because, you know, if we succeed in some way, if we at least manage to get people talking, it might help as a framework in other areas of life where misogyny is present.
Yeah, definitely. I think if we want to make a change as well, we have to know what we want to change. It needs to have a direction. And I think on a larger scale, I think we need to campaign for better education about consent in schools, which is something that we will probably do. But on this small scale of the scene and our podcast and people who actually give a shit who listen, we're going to have a chat for now.
Love that. So, from your recollection of the history of music, where do you personally remember where, I guess, this, well, misogyny was so obvious, I suppose, in music?
Yeah, so it's a combination of things for me. I noticed how, and this is one of my theories actually for later, so I'm only going to brush by this, but I feel like my perception of men in bands is that they have a little bit of a god complex.
Okay.
And I think that power dynamic between the stigmatization of fangirls and men in bands has created a massive disparity within the scene, or just musicians in general. I also think there's just misogyny in the world.
Yeah.
And that is obviously going to be reflected in art. Even though we would like to think that people who are artists believe in equality, it's always going to filter through somehow. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that women aren't the only marginalized gender. But from my experience as a woman, that's what I'm talking from here.
Yeah.
But the first time I noticed, I think, was pop punk lyrics.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah.
And also the depiction of women in music videos. I think when I was a child, I didn't think it was an issue to have, I don't know, they're either like washing cars in their bikinis or like smoking on a curb. But then women in their own music videos do that as well. So I don't know why it's different. I don't know whether it even is.
Definitely.
But I've talked myself into a hole. What about you?
Well, it's so interesting that you mentioned the disparity, because that was actually my first point. We mentioned in the fangirling episode the power and gender imbalance of fan to performer. And you see it. You've seen it for decades. We've seen it in Elvis Presley, the Beatles, let's say modern day all-time low One Direction. You know, in every sort of footage that you see, it's always screaming girls. And I think that music is targeted towards these audiences because they know that they've got the disposable income, the free time, the passion, but most importantly, that they are impressionable. And so, you know, the way to maximize their profits is by targeting these people. But then, and, you know, maybe that's not so bad, but I think the issue is where it gives actual abusers the avenue to make these moves, I suppose. You know, they've got all these people who are willing to kind of just do anything to impress or have their moment or, you know, whatever they've dreamed of with this person. And that is totally taken advantage of.
I think there's a slight misconception, or perhaps not misconception at all, but there's a an idea in people's heads before they become a rock star, for argument's sake, I'm going to use that word. I remember hearing stories about gigs in like the 50s, the 80s, where front men of bands would just point at a woman in the crowd and be like, get her backstage.
Oh my God.
And like, just that. And also for her, that would have been a nice thing potentially. Like, we don't know how she felt about that. We don't know how they felt about that, whatever. But there's always this idea, or at least in a kind of fantasized point of view of like, if you're in a band, you can have any woman, and that's kind of how it works. And perhaps people who are younger and then go into music, and again, this isn't every musician, we know loads of musicians who are fucking lovely, just kind of assume that that's the case and that's how you can treat people.
Fantasize is such a good word. I put the rock star ideal is admired by people from afar. You know, oh, how cool, you know, they get loads of women, and you know, that's kind of, again, this is a generalization, obviously, and actually not what a lot of men think, but the best man, I suppose, will be the person who is able to pull loads of women, because it means that they're attractive and desirable, whatever. But, you know, for example, in history, apparently, this is what Livy told me, I got a lot of help from her with these theories.
Oh, I'm glad, because I've also sought external help.
Elvis married his wife when she was 15, I think, and they stayed in that relationship. Modern day example, obviously they're not married, they're not still together, but Joel Madden and Hilary Duff, when she was like, what, 16 or something?
I think she was 15 when they got together.
15, yeah. You know, we still see it to this day, what we saw decades ago, or what people saw decades ago. And not just that, but it was also harder for women to get into music. In fact, it still is. And so perhaps you have stuff like fangirls and groupies or whatever, because the only way that they can get into music is to get closer to the musicians, perhaps.
I didn't even think about that. That is such a good point. And even now, when I hear interviews of like fucking awesome women in bands, and we've done it as well, I'm not saying we're forgiven for, like, we're excused for this, but you always get the, and how does it feel to be a woman in a band
question.
And I know we do it because that's the point of the podcast, but it would be great to get to a point where that's not even relevant.
Totally. To be fair to ourselves, I don't think we ask such a general question. I think, we are great, but the nitty-gritty rather than like, because you see in those interviews are kind of like obvious, you know, it's just asking to be like, wow, how amazing, but we're not trying to like make
the
music seem so amazing. Give us the goss. Yeah, and obviously all these differences between fan and musician is kind of, I think, what has fostered this environment that we see today.
Oh my God, that was fucking great.
Wow, me. Why don't we start? We'll explain a theory each as to why the alternative scene specifically is the way it is today. So do you want to start, Katie?
Yeah, so I think I'll start with my point about, and I don't know how to word this eloquently, but it feels like a lot of anger with no clear direction. So we were talking, I remember it so clearly when we interviewed Lizzie Farrell, and they were saying about how lyrics and like creating art is all from a place of either discomfort or trauma, not always, but like the strongest lyrics can be. And I think we were all talking about how there's a certain understanding of trauma within the scene. So I think there's a lot of unaddressed trauma, and that becomes either prevalent in lyrics or in behaviors. And I think it's just something that spreads, for lack of a better phrase.
That's actually so interesting, because also perhaps, again, theorizing that the bigger an artist gets, you know, the first album could be such a good release for all the anger or emotions that they have. But as they get bigger and as they're sort of, what's the word?
Is the word spread?
No, restricted. As they're restricted to what they can say, perhaps they're not able to release as much as they could before. And like you said, are turning it into behaviours.
Yeah, and it's the same reason I don't laugh at sexist jokes anymore. Because I used to find them funny and think, oh, it's just a joke, it's not offensive. Whereas now I'm like, it's perpetuating a negative stereotype. And it's the same as if you continue to write lyrics, even if you're like, it's a song, it's art, it's fine, that are violent towards women, then that eventually might influence somebody.
Definitely.
I know that it's different with art. Like,
yeah.
I know it's different. Like, Wargasms, one of my favourite lyrics by Wargasms, I want to kill somebody. Mm. Like, I know they don't want to, actually.
Yeah.
But it's that fine line, isn't it, between, like, dangerous lyrics and art, and it's slightly patronizing to assume that someone's going to be influenced by a lyric, but it's also something to consider.
Well, it's a bit like video games, isn't it? People play video games where you kill people, but very rarely will somebody actually kill somebody. However, it's all part of one system, I suppose.
And on the video games thing, if you're playing GTA and you kill some random people on the street, it's all fun and games, but there's like an extra element added when people like seek out to kill the sex workers. Why do they do that?
I've never thought of that before. Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
So yeah, I think anger with no direction is the most succinct way I could put it, but I think unaddressed trauma and evocative lyrics within the scene are potentially a reason.
Going back to your point about art as well, the fine line between art and danger, is that people need to understand that art is dramatized, just like comedy is, just like writing, any kind of art. It's all a little bit dramatic, a little bit exaggerated to be able to make people feel.
Fine line between art and danger sounds like a song by Gutter.
Suggest it.
No.
Okay.
What's your first theory?
I want to say that all the theories that I have, they're all linked together.
Okay, I'm glad you said that because same.
Okay, good. So while I might talk about one, it definitely relates to the next one that you might mention or I might mention. I'm sure we have very similar ones.
Yeah.
So the first one I wrote down, because I tried to write it in a clear order, was misogynistic lyrics like you already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the perspective of these songwriters, you know, nice guy who struggles to face rejection or deals with it by writing songs, like we said, the emotional release.
Yeah.
But because a lot of people who listen to this genre, like we said, there is an understanding of trauma, or is it like we said with Lizzie, that we're all kind of outcasts?
Yes.
Because of that, they relate to these situations really easily, but then they also start to take on the thought processes.
Yeah.
So, for example, you know, if, like, little teenage Tommy listens to Newfound Glory and gets rejected by a girl, the only way he knows how to respond is what he's already learnt, for example, in lyrics. I think it just kind of, these lyrics validates bitter responses towards rejection rather than just accepting it and moving on.
Yeah, I find it so interesting how you're supposed to, well, not you're supposed to, that's shame associating language. You could take your emotions out by writing a lyric and by performing rather than taking it out on a human being.
Mm.
So like, if you have it in you to abuse somebody, surely art is, or music is, a method of getting that out of your system rather than not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I do know what you mean.
If you need to get your anger out, write a song rather than hurt someone, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think perhaps when you're a teen, you lack the confidence, maybe, to think, oh yeah, I could write a song where I could do this.
Yeah.
You're just a lot more emotional, aren't you? Because of, you know, your hormone changes throughout those years.
Yeah, and I think you're making a better point about people within the scene, not just musicians within the scene.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm still focusing on musicians, which is naughty, and I shouldn't have done
naughty.
That. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
But I think when you have these thoughts as a teen, it's hard to shake them in your, you know, years when you can actually have adult relationships.
So. Yeah, and your formative years are massive.
Yeah, exactly. And then...
That was so crap compared to yours. I even sat upright to get it out. Just feel it coming.
Maybe you should have hunched like I did.
Ugh.
And I think that, you know, Blink-182 do it, for example, use words like bitch, whore, all this kind of stuff. It's not them using, well, it is them using the words, but it's also how regularly they use the words as well.
How, like, normal it is to use them
is
weird.
Especially because these terms are also so gendered too.
Yeah, why can't you just call a woman a prick? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have to make it about a vagina. Just be like, you're a little prick.
or a miserable fucking cunt, as I call the bus driver in Aberdeen.
No, I could make that gendered. I could make that about gender. But most insults are gendered. Like, prick is a penis, isn't it? A little one.
Yeah, that's true. But stuff like dick, for example.
Is a dick,
but I don't think that's exclusive to men.
No, I also... my main insult is twat, but that is a vagina, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Or a fish, pregnant fish.
What? Oh. What, a twat is a pregnant fish?
Don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure it is, though. Ask Libby, she'll know.
Okay, I'll ask her. But what about you? What is your theory? Or do you have anything to add to misogynistic lyric theory?
Well, I guess they're all linked, aren't they? Like, I can go into my next one, but I think it links really closely with what we've already discussed.
Mm.
So I think power dynamic is a massive thing, and this is not in any way victim shaming, but I think from speaking to other people, pop punk fan bases tend to be, or at least used to be, kind of young girls who idolize the band members.
Mm-hmm.
However, that does not mean that they are then yours for the picking. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to idolize somebody without that becoming a power struggle.
Yeah.
And I hate the idea. I was speaking to Jono about this, and we were kind of agreeing that you should still be able to idolize people. You can't just say don't idolize people, because then who have you got to look up to?
Definitely. Like, I hate the phrase never meet your idols, because they should just be nice people. Why should you have to encounter them to realize that they're awful when they could just not be awful?
And Jono was saying that it kind of perpetuates the idea that people aren't flawed, when actually everybody is.
Mm.
You can't just be a perfect person, because that doesn't really exist. So
I remember Boys Like Girls. Did I tell you? Boys Like Girls toured with Kids in Glass Houses years ago, obviously. And I can't remember what date of the tour it was, but basically the singer of Boys Like Girls, I think after they played or during the time they played, I can't remember, went to a security guard and was like, pick out that girl. Can you tell them we want her to come backstage? Basically doing what you said they used to do back in the day in, what, the noughties. And took her backstage. She had a boyfriend as well, who was like right next to her.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Scandalous.
I know.
Did she go?
I think so.
Quez.
Do you reckon?
No. Depends on whether she had a choice or not.
Yeah.
So back to the kind of idea of power dynamic. I just wanted to make it clear that I wasn't victim blaming or victim shaming. Because there are so many elements to this. I've already mentioned my idea that I think a few people within the scene have a kind of god complex.
Mm.
I also read an article by The Guardian that interviewed a man who had committed sexual assault. He said that all sexual offenders, in his opinion, suffer from severely compromised capacity to empathize with others.
Mm.
He said that he wanted other people to suffer the same pain that he went through, and he had no idea about empathy back then, which I think is part of another element of power dynamics, which is growing up, I guess. Like, I don't want to go too far into it because neither of us are psychologists, but I think there has to be some sort of trauma or event or struggle that you, and this is not me kind of sympathizing with abusers. Mm. I'm just, as we've said, trying to get to the root of the problem, because there are people who I know just wouldn't do that.
Mm.
And I don't know why I know that, but, and I know that everybody thinks that about their friends, but I think talking about the root of why offenders do it is also important, because we can't prevent it if you don't acknowledge that there's a reason that they've done that, unless they are just totally incapable of feelings. In that case, they're a psychopath.
I wonder whether it's like empathy hasn't been taught as well, because I do think it's something that as you grow up, you learn. I don't know if you are. I think you're born with it to an extent, but I think feeling, for example, when I was younger, I hope no one thinks I'm a psychopath for this, but I remember watching this video and it was like about flies being burnt. And I didn't feel sorry for the flies. I was just like, wow, this is so interesting. I want to burn flies now. And I remember telling that to my friend, Liv. And she was like, you're a psycho if you think that. And I was like, oh my God. But now I know, older, I'm not going to burn flies. But someone I know as well, had a, and they're same age as us, had a really bad breakup recently and decided that instead of just sort of trying to move on, would try and get revenge on the person that broke up with them by like getting back together with them, luring them into this false sense of security and just being like, oh, okay, bye. I didn't actually care about you.
What?
Yeah, it never happened because that person didn't want to get back with them. But I know.
We can only talk from our own experiences, which is why everything is so hard to kind of dissect. But I remember crying when I was a toddler in the supermarket because I saw eggs for sale and I didn't know that they were unfertilized. And I thought they were just selling chicks for people to eat.
You're such a nice person.
No, I'm just obsessed with fucking animals. But I think that is a form of empathy from like a toddler. And I think empathy is a really natural human instinct, which is why I think it's, and again, we do not know what we're talking about here, but I think that's why it's got names when you don't have it. Like you are scientifically, that's the wrong word, you are diagnosed as a psychopath if you don't have it.
I think it's a bit of both, isn't it? It's
love how the combo's gone here. What are we doing?
It's definitely environmental as well as, not genetic, but what's the word where you're born with it? No, I guess it is genetic.
Nature v nurture.
Yeah, nature v nurture.
This isn't that relevant to the point I was making about power dynamics, but I just found this really fascinating from the same Guardian article. It was talking about how to move on as an abuser, or like how to show that you've reformed. And the reporter said they need to move beyond feeling humiliated by public exposure and its consequences, such as job loss, status, relationships, and criminal prosecution, and develop a greater tolerance for feelings of shame and guilt, which is a really good way of putting it.
Oh, that's so interesting. So basically, they need to be embarrassed more. Is that what they're saying?
Well, they need to move past the feeling of embarrassment.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And realize that that shame is what you need to kind of move forward.
Oh my God, that's so interesting.
Brené Brown, that shit.
Wow.
Anyway, this isn't really the direction I meant to take this point in, but that is the point of these podcasts, is so that everyone can just listen with your mates and be like, shit point, Natalie, great point, Natalie, and like have your own discussions on your own.
I thought you were going to go, shit point, Natalie, great point, Katie.
No, I actually meant to say shit point, Katie, great point, Natalie, but had to say great point for both.
Oopsie.
Anyway.
Yes.
Next one.
So a lot of what you've already mentioned is included in the points that are going to come later, so I'll obviously link those then. But my next point is the sexualization of nerds / losers / outcasts.
I'm pleased about this, joking.
So I feel like this started off with the OC. I know I mentioned this loads, but for example, do you watch The OC?
No, I was about to ask you whether The OC was kind of ingrained within pop punk culture.
It was. Subculture. I think it popularized pop punk.
Because that was, it had like pop punky music in it, didn't it?
Yeah, like Death Cab and Jimmy Eat World, etc. But Adam Brody, the actor, his character Seth Cohen, was your typical nerd, loved video games. No one spoke to him in school. He skateboarded. He
classic.
Was really smart, but obviously attractive, because otherwise it wasn't. Anyway, and he was, in terms of his interests, were probably what a lot of these other people were like. And so when he got the prettiest girl in school, that made the whole dynamics of what nerds were supposed to be like change in mainstream media.
Did she have a good heart?
It got better as the years went by. She became a vegetarian, I think. Or she went to Brown University and she like campaigned for animal rights and stuff.
Aww.
But when she is introduced into the show, she's a massive bitch.
I just wanted to make sure that she was nice and pretty, because that's often a thing that in certain teen shows, the pretty one's always a bitch. And it's like, you can be pretty and kind.
Well, Marissa, the other main girl, was pretty and kind. So.
Okay, good.
And she got kind. Summer got kind. But anyway, yeah. So, but then you will see it in, for example, The Big Bang Theory and 90210. The same situation where the nerds are sexualized or desired by really attractive women. And I think that whoever could identify to these characters probably got a bit of an ego boost, thinking that they were maybe too good for everybody or everybody fancied them. Especially people in bands who also identified with these characters they have people handed on a plate to them. They have women in crowds given to them. They can just pick out, like you said, just pick out from the crowd. Subsequently, having their ego boosted by this framework, in addition to stuff like having people cheer them on every single night, sing their praises, compliment them constantly, I think it is going to naturally give somebody an inflated sense of self.
Yeah. Do you think it's worth noting at this point? Okay, I'm talking from me here. I don't know whether, like, if I was watching a band that I loved, if I was like 16 and one of the band members pointed me out and was like, come backstage, I probably would have gone.
Well, you know...
Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And, like,
and they know that.
It's really interesting you say that because I obviously won't name names, but Ian Watkins, when this girl was 16, messaged somebody I know being like, oh, hey, how old are you? Blah, blah, blah. I just started chatting. And the person that I know obviously said they were 18 because they didn't want Ian Watkins to be put off by their age. But he knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that they would say yes. He knew they were underage, whatever. But you're right. I think a lot of people in that same position you just mentioned would have said yes. Because of course, like, I'm so special and blah, blah, blah. Like,
and they create that like competitive element of it where it's like, which one of us is going to get to meet him or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think it's not the young girl's fault for doing that.
Oh, no, definitely not.
I would definitely have done that just for the story. I think I would have been, perhaps not at 16, I think I knew that most men just wanted to fucking shag me then, but maybe when I was a bit younger, I think I would have been like, oh wow, they want to hang out or like be my mate, or even like fancy me but not try and sleep with me or not try and do anything. I would have seen that as a nice thing until I got a little bit more wise to it. But
definitely, I think you mentioned a really interesting point there about it's not their fault for going backstage, because you're right, it's not. But I think that them going backstage leads to victim blaming.
Yeah.
And oh well, it's your fault, you shouldn't have gone backstage, you should have known better, blah blah, of course, because that's what always happens. But yeah, I think again, based on what everything you said, it's a power trip combined with the power imbalance which creates these scenarios.
Yeah, because if you're just like, say for example, I was at work, right? It's me, John, Claire, Josh in the office, and I go, Josh, do you want to come in the office room with me? And then try and like attack him. That's an equal playing field. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a really bad example.
Yeah.
But like, that is an equal playing field, and there wouldn't be any like pressure for him to say yes from, like, I don't know why I'm talking about attacking Josh. Sorry.
You're right though. There's no sort of like, you know, for fan to band member situation, the fan, there are all the positives.
Yeah.
They don't recognize the negatives. Whereas for a band member, it's one positive, which is you get to sleep with somebody.
Yes. That's the point I was trying to make.
What's your next theory?
So I was just doing that thing, you know, when you look at someone and then you're like, oh, I really like you.
Oh, did you just do that for me? Oh, I was wondering why you were looking at me like that.
I'm just in love with you.
Oh, what the hell?
Okay, so this comes back to the point that I made earlier about it being a bit of a feedback loop with cancel culture becoming so prominent that everybody will be cancelled and therefore the terrible stuff won't seem as terrible and the mild stuff will seem more terrible.
Mm.
And then people are just uncancellable because everybody is cancelled because someone did a racist tweet 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's important to not acknowledge the different reasons why someone might be cancelled. I think in our cancel culture episode, I definitely wasn't totally clear with what I meant each time I was talking about someone being cancelled. So I think in the instance of somebody doing a misogynistic tweet 10 years ago, I wouldn't cancel them. Anything on Twitter, to be honest, fuck off.
Mm.
I'll be honest. It's a stupid, I love it, but I think you can't judge someone's actions on what they write on a fucking tweet.
Yeah.
And obviously there's anomalies to that. I think if you've got a massive platform and you say something racist, transphobic, anything-ist, then yeah, fuck off.
Yeah.
But I think Twitter's just fucking ridiculous. But if you've physically abused somebody, then yeah, I stand with survivors and I think you probably should be cancelled. However, the fact that people are being cancelled for mild stuff, in my opinion, has kind of made it all blur into one, and therefore people might be getting away with stuff more because it's just part of cancel culture.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's such a good point, actually, definitely. And I think also it kind of makes extremely severe situations normal almost, because like you said, it's all categorized in the same thing, which is, ugh, it's just cancel culture.
Exactly. And I saw this, I was looking at, if anyone wants to look at it, it's called the cancel culture thread on Reddit. I don't think they're called threads, but I'm not cool enough to know what they're called. Subreddit.
Yes, yes, I am.
And somebody said, not everyone is a bad person, but everyone does bad things. A good person is someone who does a bad thing, but then tries to make it right in any way possible. I was like, great summary.
Yeah, love that.
So somebody else said, once everyone is cancelled, no one will be. So make sure those that truly don't deserve their platform are cancelled, basically.
That's so true.
And I just found it really interesting. There were so many discussions on Reddit about it and talking about the ever-moving ethics barometer and how it makes everybody a bad person. I know we spoke about cancel culture loads, but I do think cancel culture is partly the reason for the scene being how it is.
I think that's actually such a good point. And I mentioned this a bit, I think I mentioned this further down, but in instances where people have tried to cancel somebody and the person who is being cancelled actually has loads of people defend them, or they don't actually become cancelled, then I think it allows them to feel like they have a god complex, like you mentioned. And that actually leads me on to this point that I'm going to make. Is that okay if I make this point?
Yeah, go on, Claire.
So, yeah, in tandem with everything that I've just mentioned, and also, you know, we've literally seen this firsthand ourselves, peers sucking up to the person, a person, doesn't matter who it is, when they're actually slagging them off behind their back and sucking up to them on Twitter. Ugh. They think that everything that they say is right, and that they're looked up to, and they can't do anything wrong, because no one's told them otherwise, because people are too afraid. Like, if they tell this person that they've done something wrong, then are they gonna not get that step up in the industry? Are they not gonna get the support slot? Are they not gonna do this? People are so afraid to just say it how it is, so afraid to actually dislike people.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, people then think, everyone likes me.
That is such a good point.
You know,
and it's okay to just not like someone.
I know. It's not fine. Deep. You don't have to hate each other. You also just don't have to like each other.
You just don't have to be mates.
Yeah, exactly. But that, in addition to, you know, having fans that worship you, gives them this complex. You know, there's always going to be people who are there to defend them or stay silent in these situations.
Why do you think voicing an opinion about abuse in the scene is controversial?
I think saying anything that is political is controversial.
But surely being a musician is political.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm one of those people that thinks, I think everything is political, because everything affects something else and everyone affects other people, and politics is an umbrella term, isn't it? For kind of ethics, morals, policies, all of this stuff. So I can literally make anything political, but I understand why that's a reach sometimes and why it's not always helpful to do that. But
I guess it depends on also what kind of musician you are, maybe, or what you write about. Yeah, I reckon Scar is political.
Taylor Swift?
Yeah, I reckon political, because she talks a lot about sexism.
Okay, let me think of some. Keith Urban?
I don't know if I could name a Keith Urban song.
Why do I always talk about Keith Urban?
Do you?
John Mayer?
Not sure.
He talks about Jesus a lot.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm done.
Anyway, what are the theories?
Okay, so I'm moving on now to my theories that I've discussed with other people.
Okay.
So this is someone else's theory who is much more intelligent than me when it comes to music. But they were saying how hardcore as a scene is based off criminals. So people would go to like gigs and form bands to keep them out of trouble. And now with social media, you can kind of cool shit out. So it's really interesting. So I think they were talking about how, because the hardcore scene is based off criminals, that scene is kind of bled into other scenes. So like metal, softcore, pop punk, and all of that is now just under the blanket alternative scene umbrella. So the roots of that was people who were genuinely trying not to commit crimes by getting into music. But I think the roots of it were essentially naughty boys. So he was saying as well that like back in the day, and even now, some gigs were like genuinely dangerous. It was a way to like let anger out, let frustration out. And I think that's just kind of been tarnished into the modern day.
Sure.
And I think, because I think it was probably really healthy, that might be the wrong word, but you know, you hear so many stories of people who were in a really disenfranchised background, and they found music and it saved them. And that's why I really love art as a concept, because I think it helps people.
But it goes back to what you were saying about music for emotional release and trauma. These people who were criminals going into hardcore, that's probably what they were doing.
Yeah, and it's the same as people who go into rap music.
Yeah.
People who, and the way that the scene has evolved to include all of these other genres, I think it's just something, there's been some sort of miscommunication, something's been missed along the way.
I wonder whether it's listeners who haven't experienced what the, you know, the originators of hardcore have experienced, are listening to these lyrics, are kind of what we said in the lyrics episode, the pop punk lyrics episode, are picking up on these commonalities in these hardcore bands' lyrics, using them themselves without actually having the experiences, only because they know that it fits that genre.
Yeah.
And just not, you know, just perpetuating misogyny again. So my next point is the culture of stuff. Do you remember that website, Is Anyone Up?
Yes.
So I think its peak was in 2011 or something like that. Yeah. I listened to a podcast about it. For anyone that doesn't know, this website, Is Anyone Up, was essentially just a porn website, but for, I guess, people with clout.
Yeah.
So scene women or guys in bands or whatever. But it wasn't that these people uploaded it. It was a revenge porn website.
Yeah.
And everyone was on this website. The website had so many visits daily.
Oh, that's just unlocked a fucking horrid memory.
Oh no.
Oh god. No, just like that time.
Oh yeah, totally. But you know, this website and everyone's participation in it normalized revenge porn. It normalized sending nudes. It normalized taking what's it when you don't get someone's permission to like take a nude and then you like have to read it.
Oh, I don't know.
That basically, yeah. As well as people accessing these people's nudes so easily, it normalized all of that. And revenge porn especially, I think, just didn't help the scene situation at all.
Do you think there is, and I think this is a bit of a big question to go off script for, so apologies, but just going with my brain, do you think there is a reason that, how do I word this? So obviously the stereotype of femme presenting people in the scene, like there's a certain way that you would expect somebody in the scene to look, okay, who presents femme.
Yeah.
So you know, like tattoos, maybe dyed hair, maybe big makeup,
leather,
or like piercings. Do you think that stigmatization of a scene woman is another reason for the way that they're treated?
Yeah, probably actually. That's such a good point, because I wonder whether people being exposed to these photos of people allowed them to objectify any alternative looking femme presenting person.
I just always read stuff online about how women with tattoos, women with piercings, women with kind of colourful hair always give off like a hypersexual energy.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? Like, I get it. I think people that look like that are really hot. I'm not just going to assume that they want to fuck me though.
Totally.
It's hard to explain any like kind of theory behind this.
Yeah.
But
I wonder whether that links back to groupie culture and how people in bands would often go for people who looked like this, or well-known people, MySpace famous people would go for other, you know, tattooed MySpace famous looking people. And so because of that, that's why they think that, you know, women who look like this are like this.
Yeah.
Almost. I don't know. Because you'd hear stories about, oh, I can't remember the name of the person, but they dated, like, I think they dated Mikey Way from My Chemical Romance, and then they dated Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy, and then maybe the guy from The Used. They just kind of dated a lot of guys in bands. Kind of like typical person that you'd expect to look like that and stuff like that, because obviously, you know, people who were into that music probably knew who this person was. Whether just knowing that is also what gave people this stereotypical idea of an alternative looking person.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I'd love to get someone on to talk about that.
Totally.
I don't think it's with all cases, but I think there's definitely something to discuss in the hypersexualization of alternative looking girls.
Oh my god, that could be just a totally different episode.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, I'll write it down.
Cool.
Okay, what's your next theory?
So this is, again, a bit of a reach.
Okay.
But it's more about the modern state of the scene rather than the roots of it. I think, and again, I don't mean to just totally call out Twitter here, but I think, and this was a conversation that I've had with other people as well who have given me their input on this, but Twitter? Just...
Oh, just Twitter generally.
Twitter, yeah, I think...
Actually, I think, yes, I agree with you, but not just Twitter, social media.
Yeah, so the reason I say Twitter is because I think Twitter contributes to cancel culture in the sense that it's an absolute echo chamber. I only follow people who I think my morals and ethics are aligned with.
Mm.
And that, I'll admit, is for one reason and one reason only, is that I don't want to be seen to be following other people who are right-wing or who I don't... Like, I used to follow quite a few right-wing people just so that I had different perspectives.
Mm.
Don't get me wrong, I didn't like it very much, which is why I unfollowed them. But also, I remember... Last time I looked on J.K. Rowling's Twitter and saw that people I respected were still following her, I was like, what?
Yeah, it's the same with...
Why?
His name is Donald Trump, isn't it?
Donald Trump, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I just forgot for a moment.
What? Why did we both forget his name? God, he's such a has-been.
But loads of people who portray themselves as left-wing follow Donald Trump, and whenever I went on his Twitter, I was like, what?
But that's probably because they find his tweets interesting, yeah, or because he's literally the president.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's okay, but I wouldn't have done that because I don't want to, number one, contribute to any of their following,
mm-hmm.
and number two, don't want people to think that I like his tweets.
Yeah.
And I did the same with Piers Morgan. I was like, I hate this guy, but I also want to know what you're saying so that I can have a go at you for it. So I wanted to follow him, but then I was like, no, because people would think I like him,
yeah,
if I follow him. And also don't want to add to his following.
Yeah, people also probably follow these people who are left-wing because people like being angry, don't they? Or they like feeling something. And
yeah,
so following these people allows them to feel angry at,
yeah,
something. But actually, I think, you know, on the wider topic of social media, I definitely don't think that that helped the current state of the scene as well, because I'm literally... just making up all these terms as we go along, and I've literally just made up this point, but it's like DM culture, sliding into the DMs, because your phone nowadays is the most sacred thing that you own. And so on your Instagram, for example, if I slid into your DMs, Katie, unless you told people that I slid into your DMs, no one that I know who didn't know you would know that I slid into your DMs.
Mm.
You know, there's like kind of a... there's a secret sort of side to social media, which is,
yeah,
through DMs.
But then there's also the flip side of that, which is social media is the best way to expose people for doing,
yeah,
that. And for committing these crimes and abusing people,
yeah,
is social media is the only way I've ever seen it come out.
Definitely.
So it's weird how it works like that. It adds,
yeah,
to the secrecy, but also adds to the call-out culture.
I wonder whether, though, there's also, because of its sort of, I don't know the word for it, but there's a bit of impermanence there, because you can unsend things. WhatsApp, for example, unsend loads of messages and somebody wouldn't know half the conversation. You can also communicate with someone so quickly if you think you might be outed, being like, oh my god, please don't tell anybody, please don't do this to me, blah blah blah, which, you know, we've seen in screenshots before.
Yeah,
but I think
have.
That, you know, everything that we've mentioned put together is probably also part of it.
Ugh. I haven't got any more theories.
I've got one more theory. Wow, I kind
of... just sounded so dumb.
Which is internalised misogyny.
Oh, absolutely. I would say that's a fact.
Defo, actually.
Yeah.
Defo. Especially in this scene. Two people, and I don't want to be mean to them because I think they are both queens, but Hayley Williams and Misery Business, for example. You know, everyone loved the idea of being Hayley in that situation rather than the other girl.
Yeah.
And Avril Lavigne and Skater Boy, everyone wanted to be the skater girl, you know? And it wasn't necessarily the fact that they had won the guy, it was the fact that they could gloat to the other girl.
Even Avril Lavigne's girlfriend.
Oh yeah, that's so true. Avril, come on.
Av, although her new song with Willow is absolutely empowering.
Oh yeah, it is actually.
Love it.
I really love that one.
Love it.
But I guess part of that, and its relatability to other girls or femme-presenting people, doesn't help our side as two girls. Just two girls. Took me ages to do that. where perhaps, obviously not us, but somebody else in the situation who maybe is a bit more naive or ignorant would not believe somebody when they came out with an accusation, not believe survivors, or, I don't know, would think, oh, well, you know, it's just, again, victim blaming.
Yeah, and I think there is a certain... I think there's internalized misogyny from women, and there's also just blatant misogyny in life. I know this we're kind of full circled now because this is how we started. But I think there's a perception of weakness from women, which makes people think that they can do it, they can get away with it, and people won't tell anyone.
That's so true.
So there's that needs to be addressed. And also, even if someone is weak, doesn't mean that you then abuse them.
I know.
And like, weak is such a subjective term. I guess it's like people who appear to be meek and well-mannered and all of that stuff. But you don't just I'm not going to be able to articulate, but...
Well, you question somebody's taste, don't you? Because typically if you're attracted to somebody, then what you think that they make, this is obviously like biologically, but you think they make... a good mate, you think that they'd be great for making children with. So but why is it that an abuser, for example, would go for somebody who seemed weak?
I think we should get Louis Theroux on that one,
shall we? Do you think he'd come on?
Yeah,
okay,
he'll definitely come on.
You reckon?
Yeah,
you do the PR then, girl.
All right, girl.
I know, I don't know why I said that. Just came out, you know.
I liked it. Shouldn't have. Is that your internalized misogyny?
No, it's just a girl pod, you know.
Yeah. All right, watch this space. We'll get through on.
Oh my god, imagine. Anyway, it's good that we are talking. We're just even talking about this because how common are these conversations?
And I think for the sake of the listener, hopefully. We find these conversations hard, not to have with each other, because we're very comfortable with each other, obviously. But, like, we have to do research to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And even then, it's, like, the amount that we have time and energy to do. And we're just kind of doing our best to prompt these conversations. And I know that a lot of people think that we can't change the scene because it's so there now. People aren't just going to come off social media. People aren't just going to suddenly become good people. But if you think like that, then we won't.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just say, oh, we can't change it, because we're just doing this as the start of what we're doing. We want to implement things on the curriculum at school. We want to talk to like charities and start petitions and stuff like that. Like, we can do it. Sorry to kind of rile everyone up. I hope you're all happy. But
all riled up.
I don't like the thought that it just can't change.
Definitely. And what was that? You sent me this amazing quote on Twitter, which was like, don't be disheartened when no one is helping you. Just feel proud that you're trying to do it on your own.
Yeah.
Something like that. And, you know, even if you've got to this far in the podcast and you don't care, you don't share, whatever, at least Katie and I are doing something, you know. And this is, in fact, if anyone else does help us, we are people who are unhappy and are actually doing something about it, rather than the people who are just sitting back and watching it happen.
Or asking us to tell them what they can do. That's nice. I like that one a lot.
I just want to clarify, Katie is defo being sarcastic, just in case anyone didn't get that and would then message us asking us what to do.
Oh, no, it was... when are you going to do something? That was the one we got.
Oh my god, fucking wait. We have lives. We have full-time jobs.
Also, why aren't you doing something?
Oh god.
Although I think they listen, so soz.
Also, if you do want to help, like I've said in every single episode, just share. Help us get the message. Help us get more allies. Even though we are proud of ourselves for doing what we can, we would also like help.
Thank you.
The end.
Love to end on a little rant, don't we? Like,
yeah, we do.
Here's a really intellectual discussion now. Fuck all of you.
It's because we involve listeners and we're like, fuck them all.
This is not our full-time job.